Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint, brought to you by Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be part of the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can read the poems along with us and make comments in the chat. I'm Faziana, and with me I have Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hey, hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Been a wild week in the library world of, you know, crazy patrons, and I say this as a crazy person myself. It's been wild. There have been some knife wielding, which was not so cool, but also some really fun times with the kids. So it's had its ups and downs, I have to say. How is the new house?
It's good. It's very large, very echoey. there's been some chaos, but it's been fun overall. Getting moved in, got the internet set up. you know, the AC stopped working, you know, of course, so it's super hot on move-in day. It's like 87 degrees in the house after being, like, in the 50s for weeks. So there's no temperature adjustment period. And so then our AC didn't work. So that was fun. We got to move in that really, really hot weather. But overall, I'm loving it. Still getting all the boxes opened. So that's, I messed up my knee, so I don't know what's wrong. I should probably make a doctor's appointment, but I've been putting it off. I'm limping pretty hardcore. There's not a lot of pain, but I'm limping a lot. And then I can't bend my knee more than like 90 degrees. So.
Yeah, that's not good. You want to be able to move it.
Yeah. I know I should make a doctor's appointment. It's just since it's a busy week, and I realize that's a crappy excuse, but there you have it.
Do not be stubborn like my husband. I don't know what's going on with him. He thinks he has an ear infection. I think he has an infected tooth. He has, like, iced his face all the time, like, moaning in pain. I'm like, go to the dentist. Go to the dentist. But no.
The dentist or the doctor, get one or the other.
Right?
Yeah, I know where to go. I will go.
Everything's closed today because it's Canada Day, so that was his excuse. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, Brooke, don't do this. Go to the doctor.
I probably would have gone faster if it actually hurt.
Well, that does make a difference, yeah.
If it like was actually painful, then yeah, I'm sure I would have gone in. But it really doesn't hurt that much. If I had to actually guess based on like my knowledge of musculature, et cetera, my bet is I probably tore my ACL. So
well, a tear there is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I know, and that means probably they'll want to look at it and at least physical therapy, maybe want to go in there and clean it up because I may have a chunk of cartilage or something stuck in my joint, which is why I can't bend it more than 90 degrees. So that means like a surgery that's going to take like 6 weeks to heal from. So these are where my brain goes. And I go down this really long rabbit hole of things. That's why I'm
I'm
going to
hope
like,
that
no,
it's just swelling and that will pass. And you will be okay. But get it checked.
I think that's very optimistic.
I'm an optimist. What can I say? I'm more like a pessimistic idealist usually, but yeah. So to the poetry. Last week, you and Pam did the wonderful job of taking care of things while I went gallivanting. Camping for the sake of my mental health after, you know, a difficult week. And then, you know, it was a chaotic camping trip. Wonderful things, but difficult things at the same time. But now we get to read the carryovers from your contest. So that means I didn't miss all of the fun. Will you tell us about your contest?
Yeah. So the contest, from last week was, the theme was horizon. And like I do with a lot of my contests, I like to leave it pretty open for people. So I just asked for write about horizons. They're off in the distance. What do you see just past the edge? But I wanted it to be open for interpretation. You know, is it horizon going somewhere new? Is it the, you know, turn of events? Is it an actual horizon? I just wanted to hear interpretation. So I had offered some quotes and some images, which I can go ahead and recap here. But again, it was meant for loose inspiration to get the juices flowing. So the first quote that was offered up was, "Keep your eyes on the horizon and your nose to the wind," by Clint Eastwood. And then the second quote was, "The horizon is an imaginary line that recedes as you approach it," by Jennifer Goodwin. And then, "When good things are on the horizon, you keep walking towards the sun." And that one's unattributed. And then the last quote was, "The horizon of many people is a circle with a radius of zero. They call this their point of view," by Albert Einstein. So that was the contest from last week.
Sorry, hello? I was on mute. Hi, can you hear me now?
Yep. I was like, I
picked up the wrong phone, so I'm on my landline doing this. But sometimes, if I'm listening to a poem or to a longer speech, I put it on speakerphone so I can listen and look at the website at the same time preparing the next poem. And I did that, but then I picked up my cell phone to try to talk to you, which, you know, didn't work. It's not the phone that's on the line. So it seems like an amazing contest to me. And the first carryover poem is by Ben Hart. It's called The Nursery. So I'm going to give that a read. The Nursery. A ruby girl died on a sapphire day. I wish I spoke cloud so I'd learn the way. I wish angels weren't all saints so I could have my revenge. But my soul'd still remember a daughter that still saw the world in color and made her father that much fuller, slipped into nightfall's gold, lonely hollow. See, I bought off death with souls that I borrowed, and it was her who paid the price in tomorrow's. I walked the earth three times round, and still I haven't found the door at the point where the goodbye sun freezes on the refugee horizon. As if painted on a crumbling wall, it casts a shadow on the still where burning feathers fall. The door opens inward into my black expanse. I walk the earth four times round, and still I haven't found my chance. The first march in pursuit of her, I still wore clothes and brought frankincense and myrrh to bargain with, to strike a deal with death. To second time, the clothes no longer writhed or choked. I wore nothing but caked blood and mud, for every day without her, a scrape or cut. I never prayed before, but on a day, 1,000-something, I said hello again to God. You look so familiar to your favorite son. The third time, I walked the whole thing backwards, just to see if she wasn't right behind me this whole time. And it wasn't her sticking that gun between my teeth. I can't say it was a relief to realize it was me. But every time I thought of suicide, I thought of life. How we may be broken and alone, hopelessly fucked up individuals, worthy of every bit of snipe and ridicule. But we are all in open rebellion against oblivion. We are an irregularity, an impossibility. We are the only light holding back an endless black. Every time I never tried, I saw myself holding closed another door. One that waits at the bright side of the painted wall. It is simple, clefts and wrinkles, oh so small. Welcome, wood painted with tiny dancers. A little golden bell to ring, and how warm it is beneath the bright white wing of the mother who answers. A child's door that was never there before, through which I could never crawl, unless I broke my bones and I'd break them all. But Ruby Girl died on a sapphire day, and it is all of you buried in that happy grave. Mom's humming your favorite songs to you and my shyest sweet boy who was already gone. How could I have wasted so many days spending birthdays and dinners imprisoned in haze? Now they're all over and done, and I can't honestly say I could even remember just one. My door is different, feathers falling from my shoulders. I thought it was him who wasn't listening when I begged for one more time to hold her. But it was me who diluted my own divinity, who wouldn't let her sleep eternal in serenity. My door is no less kind, nor what lies behind. This door leads not to my demise, but to the next rebellion of happiness and hope that still awaits me in life. End poem.
Great reading, Faziana. I really enjoyed this piece. I particularly like the way that, you know, a ruby girl died on a sapphire day. I wish I spoke cloud so I'd learn the way. I wish angels weren't all saints so I could have my revenge. It says a lot in just those first four opening lines. You know, a ruby girl died on a sapphire day, you know, a blue day, you know, and ruby, you know, being a gem, a brightly colored gem, you know, so something precious lost on a sad day. And then the idea of I wish I spoke cloud. I love the idea that you could talk to the clouds, you know, to be like, can you lead me to where she went? Can you take me there? But of course, it doesn't work like that. And then the next two lines talking about, you know, the anger of losing someone, you know, that helplessness, like you could just bring them back to life. You know, you could go up there and like beat the crap out of God or whatever. I love that as a concept too, you know, but angels are all saints, so that, you know, you know, on some level you're not supposed to go up there and beat the crap out of angels. So I really liked it. I thought it was, you know, very well articulated even in that first opening. And then the rest of the poem kind of explores the story, you know, how the narrator has lived life and kind of evaded death and, you know, sidestepped repercussions for sins, kind of a thing. And figuring at some point he'd have to pay the devil his due, but instead he lost a child. It actually sounds like two, because there was a boy as well that was lost. And just, you know, the thinking of the different things that they've done in their lifetime, the different ways they've walked around the world, which I enjoyed that as well, being forward and the backward and, you know, the different clothing is representative of, like, different states in life and different personal growth. And ways of looking for things, especially, you know, the her that's capitalized. I found it fascinating that her is capitalized, but God is not. I thought that was interesting, you know, to show, like, more reverence for someone you're searching for and for God. You know, and to get progressively more naked and progressively more raw throughout the attempts. And then to get to the end, to be, you know, the gun between my teeth. I can't say it was relief to realize it was me, to be like on the edge of suicide and thinking, you know, that maybe it's the pursuit of this her that's, you know, she's the one that's making you want to kill yourself, but no, it's just you. Was kind of daunting as well. But to be too attached to the idea of life, you know, it's pretty powerful. You know, every time I never tried, I saw myself holding closed another door. You know, there's still another door to open. There's still another place to look, still another thing to do. And I think I've said this before, even on this show, but that I think grief itself is about the mourning of what could have been. You know, it's about the loss of opportunity. So I really like the idea of it being there's more doors to open, you know, because the finality, that is, there's no more doors to open. There's no more what ifs or options or how this good story can change. It's a very final at that point, you know, it's kind of curtains. So I love that it's like, but there's another door, and there's always another door as long as you're still alive. That's when the doors close for good. You know, but then to see that the child's door, and to lose the child instead of yourself, and to realize that all the days that you wasted, all the things that you didn't spend with the kid because you were caught up in the rat race of life, or potentially, you know, even depressed, and that how you could have spent your time better. And then you get to that last stanza where he talks about, you know, I thought it was him who wasn't listening when I begged for one more time to hold her. But it was me who deluded my own divinity, who wouldn't let her sleep in eternal serenity. You know, it was selfish to not let her go. It was all about himself and not about her. And that you know, all of these horrible things that he viewed of himself. It's just his own viewing of himself and not necessarily who he would be to God or people around him. So I thought this was really interesting. You know, and then it ends again with that, that still awaits me in life. Because, again, as long as you're alive, there are different ways your story can go. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was beautiful. I started kind of, you know, sad but also lighthearted, then got pretty dark throughout. But in a soul-searching kind of way, you know, it almost felt like a small epic to, like, self-discovery and learning to forgive yourself and let go. So I thought this was a really beautiful write with Ben Hart. Your thoughts, Fabiana?
I loved it. It was such a beautiful read. And I like the way that he describes everything. That it's the Ruby Girl and the Sapphire Day. It starts off with these colors that are emotive. When it says a daughter that still saw the world in color, it makes me think that he had started to see things in black and white, that maybe it was grayscale because he was depressed, maybe it was all good or bad and just like very bland and dark, and instead she saw it in color. And that it said she still saw it in color kind of makes me wonder if maybe she was ill, and so they were all upset about the fact that she was ill, but she still saw in color. She still saw the wonder in the world when all they could see was the sadness of losing her. I could be off with that, but that's just kind of how I saw that line. Where is it now? I liked the refugee horizon. It's like that feeling of, if I can just get to the edge there, then I'll be safe and I can be taken in by that other side of this. And then finding that no matter how much he traveled towards that, the end of the day, there was no end to it. You don't get to the edge. It always moves forward. The part where it's talking about walking backwards in hope that she's behind him the whole time, or like there's something about like going around and trying all these different ways to reach her and not ever being able to do it, that is just absolutely heartbreaking. And there's something about, oh, where it is, there it is, for every day without her, a scrape or cut, and that idea that each day without her is painful and he feels scarred by it. It's not necessarily that he's self-harming, although that's possible with these scrapes and cuts, but I think it's just, it feels that way. It's like each experience that he has that he isn't sharing with her feels like a scar. Where is it now? You already talked about this part with the gun, but that was a really powerful part, so I'm going to say it too. That it wasn't her sticking that gun between my teeth. Can't say it was a relief to realize it was me. And that just hit me. I think it kind of sums up that feeling of like he was thinking that maybe her death or losing her was the reason that he felt like he was dying and that he needed to die. And then he realized like he was doing that to himself, and that he needed to deal with things differently. It's such a powerful piece. Where is it now? As I was reading it, there's so many things. I was like, oh, I want to talk about that and that and that. And of course, I lose it. The part with the doors really struck me. So it's like they have their doors to the next life, and everyone has their own special door. And hers is so small that that part was really touching where I could never crawl, through which I could never crawl unless I broke my bones, and I'd break them all. That willingness to just tear yourself apart in order to be with someone, willing to go through all that pain to be within her little world. I thought that line was so powerful. I'm kind of speechless. I thought this was beautiful.
Great, it was very well done. I also really liked that line about breaking all of your bones to cram yourself into a space that wasn't even made for you, just to be with somebody on the other side. You know, just that crushing level of grief. It was beautifully done. I thought it was great imagery for that, so I'm glad you pointed it out. Where are we off to now?
We have Chaos in the Naked Horizon by Postscript Angel. Would you read that for us?
Absolutely. This is Chaos in the Naked Horizon. I try to pluck a bouquet of words written in smoke made by airplane trails as I stare languidly at the early morning sky. But all I can distinguish from the inarticulate chaos in the naked horizon are splotches of dust clouds that reflect my own holocaust of thoughts. They spell every sentiment within the orchard of my mind in the shades of sweet white violet flowers. And even when I close my eyes, instead of being a witness to the comforting darkness, all I can perceive is the emptiness mirrored by the silhouette of light. I anxiously crave to slit every throat from each faceless ghost inside my dreams, just so I can finally forget the memories they ignite, until all that are left are merely embers that eventually die with the scars inside the graveyard carved beneath my teacup skin. Because I've sung from the lips of tragedy, but white is a void you can easily get lost into. It is an empty grave where death just wants you to lose in order to catch you. End quote. This was a really interesting piece. The beginning of it, I imagine someone watching clouds go by. You know, as I try to pluck a bouquet of words written in smoke made by airplane trails, you know, just to try to read the words left in airplane trails, but slowly realizing that actually, while they're kind of staring at the sky, they're really more like looking into their own mind. And trying to find ways to articulate both the nothingness and despair, you know, that they feel. There's some strong language tucked in here, kind of amidst softer or more dainty language. I don't know if that's the right word, but, you go from sweet white violet flowers wedged between all the words like holocaust, and then slit every throat from each faceless ghost, you know, those, which I think works well in, like, trying to forget everything and trying to be serene and peaceful, you know. I imagine it being, like, almost meditative, but having your mind still wander back to the anger, to how much you don't want to think about it. And that emptiness, even emptiness in white, instead of black, is not good. It's dangerous. Just to ignore your problems in general is essentially the lesson, you know, that I feel like is articulated in this. That's kind of the message, you know, to just be watching the clouds in your mind, so that you're not thinking about the bad things that haunt you. But losing yourself in the clouds is no better than losing yourself to despair. I think it's beautifully written, and I think it really interestingly yanks you in and out of this violent language. I thought it was a beautiful piece. Thank you, Postscript Angel. Your thoughts, Kapisiana?
I agree. That's beautiful. That opening really grabbed me, you know, as a writer. I try to pluck a bouquet of words written in smoke made by airplane trails. Like, trying to pluck that bouquet of words, trying to grasp those words from an experience and put them together to make a poem or a story or something. But they're written in smoke, so as soon as you try to touch it, it floats away. You can't grasp those words. You can't hold on to those thoughts. You can't keep the image in the sky that's just written in smoke. There's something really beautiful about how temporary it is. When you're looking up at shapes in the cloud, and even though this is artificial clouds because it's coming out of the airplanes making that line, but there's also like this thing of like when you're looking up at the clouds and you're seeing all the shapes, and then, you know, I'm like a little kid. I like to see, like, what animals can I find in the clouds in those shapes? And they transform so quickly that it's, like, hard to hold on to an idea. It's like holding on to a dream. I think she really captures that feeling. And then, like you say, she does get into some very violent images. Was when she wants to slit the throats of all the faceless ghosts. Like, that's quite striking. But then it talks about how, where is it? When she closes her eyes and wants to see comforting darkness and just, like, be away from it all, but instead she sees white. I have lost that part, but I just found it really intriguing that often we talk about the dark as like this thing to be afraid of, and the light is supposed to be comforting. But I like that it's reversed here. There would be comfort in the dark, but instead she's forced to face the light and see her thoughts, and she can't shut down. I thought that was quite striking. It hits you again at the end there. But white is a void you can easily get lost into. It is an empty grave where death just wants you to lose in order to catch you. I feel this. I've always hated white walls. They make me think about hospitals and, like, this really old, creepy school. There's something about blank white that is very institutional and also intimidating, because it's like white space that you have to fill with your own thoughts. There's no distractions. You can't look at something. Like, they've actually changed hospitals now, so they have like murals and things on the ceiling when you get a CT scan, so you can look up at it and distract yourself, count the lines in the mosaic or something. But when it's just blank, you're left with your thoughts. And I feel like that's part of what she's talking about here. White is the void, and you get lost in it. It's a very beautifully worded and powerful piece.
Agreed. It is beautiful. I think it's interesting that you find white intimidating, like it's space that you have to fill. You know, as I've said before, like, I have bipolar, and it really kind of started to emerge when I was a teenager. I was probably like 14 or 15, but I didn't know it was bipolar at that point. I had just been told that I was a moody teenager, and then I was a little older, it was diagnosed as depression, and it wasn't until much later, after I really started to have manic phases and recognized what those were, that it became apparent that it was bipolar. But back when I was younger, I took everything out of my room and made it white. Everything. I made my whole room white because I just wanted blank space. I just wanted, like, that emptiness feeling, and I thought white would do it. But I was never really gothic. It was like opposite goth, but just as moody, I guess, like white angst. Which of that sounds like some kind of racial thing, but it just made me think of that. And I have this problem where if I'm drawing or I get a new notebook or something like that, I'm resistant to write in it because it is blank and that, like, my writing is going to somehow destroy the perfection of it. I thought that was really interesting to hear you say that. So I'm glad you pointed it out. And I do. I love that this poem uses white instead of black because it's different than you think. But it really is kind of just as dangerous. Beautiful write.
I think part of why I didn't like white when I was young, and again, this sounds like it's a race thing, and it's not at all, I have floaters in my vision because, well, actually probably because I had a tumor on my eye, but I didn't know that. So I have, like, these little floaty things, and they're very noticeable on blank backgrounds. Like, if it's a crowded kind of image, then I don't notice it. But if there's a white wall, then I can really see that little black dragon thing. It's not a dragon. I kind of call it a dragon. It's like a bunch of little dots that are in a line. It's very noticeable. So I feel like it's about the way that you project your own stuff influences what environment you find calming. I like clutter because then I can't notice stuff. I don't know, but I know my coworker who I share an office with wants everything to be perfectly blank. And so we have, like, this kind of war of, like, my messiness and her neatness. But my messiness is kind of, it's not about being messy. I don't know. It just makes me think about that how everyone sees, like, different things. And I've never seen anyone talk about, like, the white as being the scary thing to look at until I saw this, so I was like, I connect. Postscript Angel, have to talk about her. Sorry, what?
I was going to say, I also have a lot of floaters. I have a lot of them. Always have, since I was a kid. Like, I would sit there and stare at the ball and try to, like, follow them. And, of course, you follow them because they're in your eyeballs, so, like, as your eyes move, they also move. But I would just kind of chase them around. If you don't have them, this probably makes no sense to you, but if you do.
I understand. They always really freaked me out, though. I used to ask other people if they saw them. I'm like, do you see this thing? And they were like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And they thought I was, like, hallucinating. I wasn't hallucinating. I just had floaters.
They're in your eyeballs.
They're in my eyeballs.
Yeah.
the medical marvel.
Now?
now we have one by Kaiku, and it's called Until the Last Drop of Light. From the arc across sanguine dusk, I bid farewell to residual shadows that once stretched naive trees. Its earnest branches still extend a hand to rested skies for a second dance with day. And poem.
Really beautifully phrased brevity. From the arc across sanguine dusk, you know, this beautiful nightscape, kind of watching the sun sink. You know, I bid farewell to residual shadows. You know, the shadows grow really, really long. Until the sun is gone, and then, of course, there aren't shadows because you have to have light to have shadows. So I love the idea of there being, like, residual shadows as the sun sinks, that once stretched naive trees. Like, the trees are getting older with the day. I enjoy that as an image. And then the second stanza being more about the trees. You know, the tree standing with its branches raised to the sky, waiting for the sun to come back, you know, for a second dance with day, just waiting as night turns around. I thought it was really beautifully done. It's very sweet. It's very contemplative. You know, it almost feels like a haiku in its kind of simplicity. I didn't count syllables. I don't think it would be just like that very first opening line, you know, from the arc across sanguine dusk. Too long. But it feels haiku-ish in the way that you would think about it. Everything is beautifully written. Very sweet. And kind of lends a lot of images to the imagination to paint a picture of what's happening. So I really enjoyed it. Beautifully written, KK. Your thoughts, Apisiana?
I agree that it's a beautiful brevity. I think it really shows the power of adjectives. You know, it's not just dusk, it's sanguine dust. Dusk, not dust, dusk. It's not just shadows, it's residual shadows. And the trees are naive, the skies are rusted. Everything has these beautiful descriptive words that really influence how we interpret things. Especially the sanguine, I thought that was a wonderful word choice. Just excellent diction and really well thought out. I can see that she won gold in another contest for this, and I think it's well earned.
I think it does highlight, you know, great use of adjectives expertly applied in place. It doesn't feel like too much. Very, very well done. Wonderful, right? What do we have now?
We have one for you to read called The Solitude.
All righty. By Jarosaur. Here comes the moonlight in crescent shadow of the horizon. Here, reaching to the top within, the children of the awakened being. Arising in the deep, the hand of the young power awaits to answer the call that gripped from the first hour. Every past, scale into flashes of whiskers, not to be reached, which leaves me with the curve of joyous circles not breached. For the light I offer a sacrifice, teaching the coming one, solitude. When I am there, the dice will reveal my well-deserved attitude. End poem. That sounds interesting. You know, looking at the moon, you know, so many takes on horizon have been more sun-centric, which, you know, makes sense. A lot of people think of the horizon line and think of sunrises or sunsets. The moon also can play with the horizon well, especially with, like, twinkling against the water. So I like that the moon was used. You know, and then kind of awakening the children of the night kind of vibe that goes to it, you know, reaching to the top within the children of the awakened being, arising in the deep, the hand of the young power waits to answer the call that grips from the first hour. I do find that, like, nightlife is pretty youth-centric. And here I feel like it's almost allegorical for, like, temptation. You know, being lured, essentially, which I find really interesting. And then I was fascinated by the phrase, "Weaving the curve of joyous circles not breached." You know, it makes me almost think of, like, a smile of, like, happier times, like a smile for innocence, kind of a thing. I thought that was a really interesting piece. Reading that last stanza, you know, in the light I offer a sacrifice, teaching the coming ones the solitude. When I am there, the dice will reveal my well-deserved attitude. Like, trying to, you know, show other people the way in the light, and then just based on chance, determining your outlook. It's kind of interesting. Me, I'm not quite sure that I follow it entirely, but I find it a fascinating concept of kind of trying to guide children or innocent towards positivity, but still kind of enjoying watching them dance. in the darkness, if that makes sense. That way, I thought it was a fascinating write. Your thoughts, Louisiana?
It's definitely interesting. Some cool images there. When I read "Which Leaves Me with the Curve of Joyous Circles Not Breached," I kind of thought that felt like sensual. Like if it hadn't been talking about children in the earlier ones, I would think that the curve of joyous circles kind of makes me think of like breasts, and then not breached. That's like kind of like virginity, maybe. I don't know. There seemed to be something sensual about that section, but the rest of it doesn't have that sensuality. So I'm probably just totally getting it out of context. But something about the way it was worded made me feel like that. And then I like that it's about I offer a sacrifice, teaching the coming ones solitude. It's like giving up being in the limelight kind of thing, and letting the other ones advance, but also understand that, you know, life can involve being lonely. I feel like there's a lot more to this than I am catching on this read, but it definitely has a lot of potential for conversation that I think would be nice to have with the poet themselves.
You know, as I'm rereading this, I almost wonder if it's written from the perspective of the son, you know, who dies every day and switches off with the moon. Just a thought, just as in, you know, because here comes the moonlight. So I think it might be kind of written from the perspective of the sun, who must be born and die again every day and kind of switch off with the moon, trade spots. Just a secondary thought as I reread it.
I love that interpretation.
Oh. Anyway, I really enjoyed the piece. I thought it was beautifully done. Really fascinating use of language in it. So thank you, Jerzer. Where are we off to now?
This next poem is called Event Horizon, and it's by Adalit 7881. How far do we travel before there is no going back? My cluster of stars held together but always pushing away and out. This is you and I and all our entanglements. How close do we become before the threshold to infinity is crossed? You are my galaxy, my conglomerate of sparkles that light my face as I look up in wonder. Do you see me? See me watching as you cross my sky? Your movement through the day is the keystone of my life. You know this. I am your singularity. I am the black hole with such pull that your true self disintegrates and disappears into me. Lose yourself in my nothingness. I swallow you whole. I will put forth such pressure that your world becomes dense and your galaxy extinguishes. Your stars flicker out. Your clouds dissipate. Yet you always circle around. Always come back to me. We orbit each other in a never-ending dance, but never touch. Am I your burning sun? Because you are my forever. End poem.
Beautiful read, Faziana. I found this intriguing, you know, this idea of a relationship kind of circling around an event horizon, you know, and it sounds toxic, you know, like not the healthiest relationship, and yet, and the language is both beautiful and yet menacing at the same time, at least in my opinion. You know, this is you and I and all our entanglements. You know, it's kind of a mess. It's messy. how close we've come before the threshold to infinity is crossed. You know, so we can't come back till there's no way out, till, you know, it's permanent kind of a thing. You know, I am your singularity. I am the black hole with such pull that your true self disintegrates and disappears into me. You know, that doesn't sound like necessarily a good thing, you know, to just be completely absorbed by another person, that you more or less cease to exist. It almost makes me think of, why can't I think of the name of that fish? The one that's, like, black and has the lantern sticking out on its forehead that lives, like, in the deep sea.
I can't think of
the name of it. Yes, an anglerfish, whereas really you only see the female anglerfish because the male anglerfish burrow into the sides of the female and merge with them, so that all that's left is just like a little bit of their tail, and that's all, because they've just literally become a part of the female anglerfish. It just kind of reminds me of that, you know, the coming so close that you get become absorbed. You know, I will swallow you whole. So it's almost like they're luring them into this relationship where they will cease to exist. You know, kind of teasing them into nothingness. It almost feels a bit cruel, you know, like almost a little narcissistic to just be like, you know, I will devour you. Yet you always circle around, always come back to me. We orbit each other in a never-ending dance, but never touch, never become close enough. Am I your burning sun? Because you are my forever. Again, it feels messy and toxic and almost violent. You know, it's like love, but not love. So I found it very fascinating. Very interesting description of a relationship that sounds romantic but not healthy. I enjoyed the read, though. I thought it was well done. So thank you, Adil7881. Your thoughts, please, Anna.
I completely agreed with you. The part that really made me think that it was taking a toxic turn for a relationship was when it said, your true self disintegrates and disappears into me, lose yourself in my nothingness. That did feel scary. And I think this really is a good description of that kind of like passionate but destructive relationship that you can have with a narcissist. Been there, done that. This feels like it's like the poem of that. It's like really a beautiful imagery to describe a horrible thing. But it draws you in. And I feel like that's an appropriate thing for it to do in a poem about a toxic relationship, because it's like, oh, this is so beautiful. I want to get close to these stars. And then it's like, oh, crap, that burns you. It's really well done. But I definitely agree with you. It has that toxic relationship vibe. Okay, so our next poem is by Cassia F. And, oh, we have someone else here. One moment. Hello, caller. Welcome to Part Sinner, Part Saint. May I ask who's calling? Hello?
Hello? Me or not?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
I can hear you.
You were really quiet right there. What's your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm on the speakerphone outside. You probably hear the crickets. No, this is DJ GS, the Jigs.
Oh, hello.
What you said the other night.
Can you hear me?
No.
Welcome back.
Appreciate it. I was just listening. I was calling in. I was listening.
Great.
You can keep going for the next one.
Well, it's good to have you here. Did you have any comments on the last poem that you'd like to share?
I have comments, but it's more like I'm just kind of taking everything in. Everything that's been read so far has been pretty beautiful. I'm loving everything. And it's hard
that's
to.
That's great.
You guys have a better way of talking about these beautiful poems that are being presented than I do in the moment.
Well, it's great to have you here. Babbler, would you please read the poem by Cassia F?
Absolutely. This is Beyond the Reality by Cassia F. The sky, open-armed. If I glow as the horizon, can I be one with it all? Confusion, illusion of obscure thoughts. Could be scars unsealed, still longer in the depth of the magnificence I see. Swim, my dear. Reach the light you so longed for. Magician in disguise held my hand as my steps walked deeper into the ocean arms. I, surrounded by light, dove in to reach the awaiting horizon. What is beauty without pain, reaching far into the unknown? Such beauty, vision of heavenly wings, painting canvas, love brushes, swaying from left to right, delight, holy wine, drunk, I became. The bad and good danced together, yet light always wins. I walked and sent into the depths. Light held my body as my soul in the horizon, beyond the reality, captured me. End poem. Well, I thought this was a really beautiful write, you know, just about kind of walking off into the horizon, to the depths of the ocean, and kind of merging with it, just becoming part of the horizon. At least for me, it feels very aquatic, like very, I don't know, almost like a mermaid, but it's not like I picture an actual mermaid, but just like that kind of deep descent into the water. And I picture the idea of painting canvas, love brushes swaying from left to right. That line in particular, I picture almost like pickling seaweed. Painting canvas, love brushes. I really just liked the idea of love brushes, like a tickling kind of sensation from a paintbrush, yet feeling like strokes of love. I really thought that was a fascinating line. My mind took it to so many different places, you know, swaying from left to right. Holy wine, drunk I became, you know, off of love and merging with the environment. I thought it was beautifully done. Gosh, you know, swim, my dear, reach the light you so longed for. It felt almost like being called into the sea, you know, to become what you wanted to be, to reach for the moon, you know, almost lured in a way. I found this very contemplative, like it almost felt like a meditation, you know, soaking into the ocean. I don't really get the impression of like death or drowning, you know, like there's no struggle. And even so, the bad and good dance together, yet light always wins. You know, equilibration of yin and yang, or, you know, how good things and bad things interact. But there's the positivity of light always winning, you know, so that doesn't feel like a death of some kind. So I thought this was really beautiful, you know, and felt very transcendent. And I forgot what your name was. Is it Doug? Would you like to share your thoughts?
We lost him.
Okay. A PC on a youth thought.
Straight up. She,
oh, wait,
it was
he's
a
back
captain.
Now.
Speaking.
Oh.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I
accidentally had you on mute. I see you now.
No, I think I hung up on accident, but it was like a captain of a ship that just was looking out of his ship and seeing everything, and he painted a picture of everything he saw, and it was very heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, but at the same time uplifting, and it was just nice to see. It painted a picture. There was a canvas, and he stroked through the palette to create what happened. I really,
nice,
really
I like
it.
That.
I appreciate it.
Well said.
The idea of it being a painting of what someone sees, I can see that. Thanks for the comment. Abaziana, your thoughts?
I thought it was beautifully described. And I'm glad that at the end of your comment, Babbler, you clarified that it's not about death. Because normally, if I thought of someone who's kind of like just walking out into the sea, it would almost seem I'm giving up and just letting the water take me. But that's not the sense here. It's not the feeling that I got throughout this. There were a few points where, could be scars unsealed, where I could take that two ways. It could be they're opening up and the pain is there, or they're opening up and you're letting go of that pain, and you're now clear of those scars because you've dealt with them. So it could be like getting back into the pain, or it could be the release from it. And then reaching for that light, again, at first I was like, is it like, you know, letting go seeing the light at the end of the tunnel? But no, I think it's capturing like the light of life and grabbing it. Where is it now? The painting part that was already talked about, I really enjoyed that too. Love brushes. That's just beautiful. And the light held my body as my soul in the horizon. Beyond the reality captured me. Beautiful flow to this whole thing. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for sharing, Cassia.
Yeah, I agree. I do like the flow as well. It feels... I know. I think it helps feel with like that merging with nature feeling. It just—it's kind of a pacing of it. Excellent comment, Cecilia.
I kind of feel like we should read it while floating along a river, like just like on like a little raft, just floating. this next one is the Mountain Morning Moon by Robert Thomas Hall. High above Colorado's mountain peaks, far past dark midnight lights, full moon rose up at morning to greet the black and azure sky. Brightly lit, snow-crested mountains, dark-shadowed craggy valleys deep, painters' palettes of midnight blues, sparkling whites and shaded grays. A mountain morning moon, traveling with the stars, flows, glows in the morning dawn, pulling the wakening sun along.
Great read, Ephesiana. I enjoyed this piece a lot. You know, the high above Colorado's mountain peaks. If you've seen the Colorado Rockies in person, they're really pretty intimidating. They are really tall, sharp mountains that just kind of bust out of the surrounding plains. They're gorgeous, you know, and to have a morning moon the moon that kind of lingers after the sun has started to rise. You know, we've got the sun rising, and yet the moon is still visible. I always kind of like those. I like looking at them on the way to work. You know, it's interesting to see the moon during the daytime. You know, and you get this beautiful, like, articulation of what the scene looks like. You see the brightly lit snow-crested mountains, dark-shadowed craggy valleys deep, with painter's palettes of midnight blues, sparkling whites, and shaded grays. You know, this really gives you the image of it. You know, these sharp mountains with these deep crags and cracks in them that are almost black, and yet they're snow-capped. And in the morning light, you know, creeping up to hit the tips of these mountains, you know, them just glowing white. The juxtaposition of that as colors, I think, is really well articulated here. You know, a mountain morning moon traveling with the stars, flows, glows, mornings in dawn, pulling the wakening sun along. Ending rhyme or off rhyme works really well to kind of tie the end of the piece together. And then the idea of it pulling the sun along, you know, I picture almost like a Greek or Roman mythological scene, you know, where the sun gets pulled across in the chariot, but this time it's the moon, almost like the moon is a horse in that kind of chariot scene, which I enjoy as an image. I thought this was really well done and really did well to give an image and a feeling to go with it. So, wonderful write from Robert Thomas Hall. Athesiana, your thoughts?
I'm really glad that you commented on that last line, because that's what struck me as well, pulling the wakening sun along. I like that you brought in that mythological idea of the chariot and the moon actually, like, physically pulling the sun along. I think that's a great way to put it. There's something magical about that. As the moon crosses the sky, the sun begins to follow it. It does describe the mountain scene so beautifully. I've never been to Colorado, but I've been Canadian Rockies in Alberta, and definitely beautiful. I can see some of it from in the distance from here, sort of. The contrast between the dark mountain and the snow caps is always amazing. And the way that the clouds go below the level, and you can still see, like, that layer of clouds that is there, and the valleys within it. It creates such a beautiful image, and even though that there is a beautiful picture with the poem, you don't need the picture to see the mountain and the sky with such a beautiful description of it. And I like that it emphasizes the colors, the painter's palettes, because those colors are so striking. And it is really amazing in nature how much the colors have an effect on things. Last weekend when I was driving up near Lac La Hache, which is this little place like way north, it was shocking to me how many shades of green I could see in one view, because there were mountains there. So it was like you could see, like, as it went up, the places that got more rain had totally different shades of green, and it's just fantastic. So with this particular view, you're seeing the different shades of blue, but I love that it emphasizes that importance of color in creating the scene.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I agree. The idea of the, when I went to, it makes me think of when I went to Ireland. I went to Ireland in 2019. And there were so many different shades of green. It was baffling. Like, and it's so bright and so vivid and so much green. You know, it really made sense why they called it the Emerald Isle. So to imagine that in, like, tones of mountain, you know, with the deep blues, all those blues. I'm glad you pointed that out. That was an excellent observation. Doug, if you're still on the line, love to have your thoughts.
I'm still here. The imagery I pulled out of that is somebody, a Greek mythology character, at a 45-degree angle with wrangling the sun out at a 45-degree angle, just with their sandals around, wrapped around their ankles, and just pulling a sun down, just pulling it down all their might. And just, it was just imagery, like they're doing everything they can. And everything that they can do, it was incredible. Create the black sky, the craggy valley, pulling the awakening sun. It was just, that was it, this fucking, sorry, excuse my language, just pulling it down, just forcing it. And it was, there was like a mythological story to me. Like, you got it wrapped around your arms, you got your legs wrapped around a rock, and you're just pulling it down. And it was powerful.
Yeah, I also got that kind of Greek mythological feel to it with the use of that language. I pictured like Apollo. But instead of pulling down, I pictured pulling up, like yanking it out from under the horizon as the moon goes back behind the mountains, like tearing it into the sky. But yeah, no, I thought the imagery there was great also. Excellent comment.
It was beautiful. I will say that.
Where are we off to now, Athesiana?
So that was the last of the carryovers from your contest. And now we're going to get into one of my contests, which sadly only had 5 entries, but they're good entries. So this was called the Surprise
Contest.
Pardon me? Sorry, I didn't hear that.
None of mine was red.
I'm having trouble hearing. Sorry. So this is Surprise Sunshine, and the contest was... some of the gentlest, kindest men I know look like warriors and muscular arms, many tattoos, wild facial hair, and perpetual mischievous grins. Gothic clothes and resting bitch face can turn out to be a sweet, nature-loving, animal-rescuing ray of joy. Write a poem about a seemingly troubling person or a place that is revealed to be a force of good beyond first impressions. If you fall into this category yourself, write about how your good qualities may be overlooked at first. So that was the contest. And here we go. The first poem is by Darkened Auras. And I'm losing my mind, Babbler. Did you read the last one or did I?
You know, I honestly don't remember, but I'm happy to read this one.
All right, why don't you read this one?
Okay. This is My Outsides Don't Match My Insides by Darkened Auras. I may look disheveled, someone with no self-care, but if there's any way I can help you, don't be afraid to share. I may not have much money, and what I do have is not really mine. It's disability from the government. To you, I may look fine. But I have a lot of phobias. My mental health is just a thread. I feel like I'm wading through this life, just a zombie walking dead. I may not be pretty or skinny, and I'm socially inept, but luckily my beauty on the inside is something that I've kept. So while I may seem shy and dismissive, I'm really very nice. So before you judge me on appearance, I beg you to please think twice. End poem. I really like this piece. You know, the my outsides don't match my insides. you know, the thought that, you know, someone who looks disheveled and ramshackled, you know, and in first I thought it was going more towards the direction of homelessness. But, you know, it may not even be that extreme, you know, but self-care is hard to do when you're mentally unwell. You know, as someone who struggled with depression, you know, I have a bad habit of not being able to, like, really brush my hair. I have very thick, dense, curly hair. And when I'm in a poorer state of mental health, it becomes hard to manage. And it'll kind of form into, like, a giant mat that becomes really hard to manage. And I try not to let it get that way, but it's just not that easy. You know, and so I understand, like, the being disheveled when your mental health isn't faring well and how that can make you feel, you know, like feeling unable to do anything about it and yet, you know, feeling judged for it at the same time. So I really like this. And then I like the rhyme scheme of it, you know, and just the honesty of it. You know, like, please don't think that I can't help you or that I don't care or that I'm a bad person because of the weaknesses that I have, especially when the weaknesses can be so on the surface, you know, so easy to see. So I really especially like that, those last two lines at the end. So before you judge me on appearance, I beg you to please think twice. I hope this was a great poem. I think it had a great message and it also felt very honest. So I enjoyed it. Thank you, Dark and Dora.
I'm sorry, my phone broke up through like the entire piece. I can't give a good comment on that. I apologize.
Oh, okay. And your thoughts,
Aziziana? I liked it, and I can relate to it. I also relate to what you said about your hair. I have very curly hair as well. That definitely becomes a serious problem if it's not dealt with multiple times a day. And when you are in a bad state of mind or health, it's easy to not take care of it a couple times a day. So I feel that. And, I like that she opens with that. I may look disheveled, someone with no self-care. So it's not even, a matter of like, you know, unprofessional or anything like that. It's like people can tell that she's not taking care of herself. But she talks about how if there's any way I can help you, don't be afraid to share. I like that she shows that there's this goodness within her, and also that it's, you know, things can be deceptive, but she has such a beautiful little tempo to this, the way that it rhymes, and it has like a beat to it that works really well. So it keeps a little bit of an upbeatness because of that tempo that I think really works for her in that she's saying, you know, don't judge me. It's not as bad as it seems. And I think that really works out for her with the way that the flow of it goes.
Yeah. I agree. You know, it does. Yeah, I like what you pointed out about it being, you know, things aren't even as bad as they seem. Like, you know, just because outwardly even you look like a mess, you could not even be necessarily that much of a mess, if that makes sense. I don't know if it works that well, but you know, it could be from a past state of being that has since been a bit sorted out, but has some carry over to image. So, great comment, Aziziana. What are we up to now?
Well, we've lost Doug, but before he went, he did say that he was in your contest that we that we just did. So I went back and looked, and there was one. I thought it was read last week, but perhaps it wasn't. So it is a brevity, and even if it was last week, can we repeat that?
Yeah, we can repeat that.
All right. So I'm sorry, Doug, that we missed it. I would have had you read it, but we've lost you now. It looks like you're having some phone issues. So we're going to go with Horizons by DJGS117, a.k.a. Doug. Horizons. That line, amniotic, omnipotent, Hyperion, agnostic, exaggerate, nonchalant, caustically drastic, extravagant, thoughtfully, perfidious, ambiguously, deciduous. End poem.
Wow, great read. I mean, it's a bit of a tongue twister. some of these words are hard to loop together. Amniotic, omnipotent, you know, something infantile and yet all-knowing, being the line, you know, is really interesting. Like something that knows everything and yet something that's amniotic you might consider as not knowing much at all, like not even born yet. You know, not even born yesterday, just not born at all. And then omnipotent, you know, being, you know, endlessly wise, knowing all things. I thought, you know, it's such an interesting juxtaposition of words there. And then it kind of continues, you know, with Hyperion, you know, being a Greek, you know, in Greek mythology, being one of the 12 titans, you know, and yet agnostic, you know, so not knowing if that or not, and yet being like a proto-god, you know, being a titan, and then, you know, exaggerate, like a titan is huge, you know. So I'm finding there's a lot of opposites in this that are interesting, you know, nonchalant, like to be, to not care, to be flippant, wistful, followed by caustically drastic. You know, it's just like caustic is like something that like burns, you know, whether like too acidic or too basic, just being violent in it. And then drastic, you know, like sharp and dramatic, you know, the opposite again of nonchalant, extravagant, then being thoughtfully perfidious, you know, the idea of there being lines between these two things, but they're so opposite, it's almost like, where do you draw the line, you know? I thought perfidious was particularly interesting, because that is like, kind of like being a liar, you know, distrustful or false, you know, like a backstabber. So, but thoughtfully, like, so that's very schemey. And then ambiguously deciduous is also interesting, because in deciduous, I think of trees, which, you know, deciduous trees are the trees that grow leaves in the spring and they fall in the fall. And but to be ambiguously deciduous, like how do you go through dramatic cycles like that and not have it be obvious? You know, it's like the leaf colors just change. You know, something like that to be ambiguous I find very interesting. So I enjoyed it. I found it like, you know, drawing the lines between things. Where exactly does one thing start and then there's the end? You know, and how do you make that cut? So, interesting poem. I really enjoyed it. Tiziana, your thoughts?
Well, it has an excellent vocabulary. Like almost every word is, you know, $5 words. Wonderful letters here. And I have to admit, I didn't know what perfidious was, so I always love learning a new word. Like you said, it has the opposites. Within each line, there's an opposite going on. And I think that works for Horizon, because if you think about, like, when there's like the light of the sky, and then there's the dark of the land or the sea, there is like that defining line where suddenly there's a shift, and it's the opposite. It's the mirror image sometimes if it's reflected in the water, and that mirror image that you see in the opposite. I don't know, I think that's a strategic, interesting way of making us think about things. Really cool vocabulary and an unusual but wonderful take on the prompt.
Agreed, it is an unusual, but I enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it because it was unusual, you know, not something I necessarily would have thought of. I also like that there's like a first word followed by two words for most of the piece. I find that an interesting structural point of this piece. So yeah, thank you for the write. And I'm sorry we missed you last week. I thought I'd marked everyone. And I'm sorry that we missed you reading it while you were here. But thank you for the submission either way. What are we up to now, Viviana?
Now we have one by Blue Leader One, and it's from my Surprise Sunshine contest. Will you read that for us, please, Gobbler?
Absolutely. A new computer desk, and it's got a glass top, and my mouse does not love it. So I really have to work to get my mouse to move. All right, this is Beautifully Wild by Blue Leader One. I was born on the outer edge of the star, in the hot, fluctuating gases of a yellow dwarf. I gained my initiation of life. I walked upon the earth, new molten, a monument to creation. I roared. The earth thundered. I sank down and cried. The stars shouted, disaster. I felt cold, deciduous trails. I trembled and leaped and discovered a planet. Founded in solitude, cloaked in solitude. I was alone. I looked up, and the stars twinkled, eerie, mystic, hushed, a span in the flow of time. I am a star child, incredible destiny, a wonder. My eyes are flames, my words devour, my mind is penetrating light, my fingers are fragments of gravity. My will and my might, they bend reality. I stand taller than Olympus, straighter than a ray. I envelop the universe, I kiss the moth time, new. The beginning, I sparkled among the brand new waters. I was there, I created the flower, the offspring of the butterfly. End poem. This is a beautiful write, and I feel like it's about embracing the things that make you different, the things that set you apart, that make you wild, you know, to not fit in, to be so far out that born on the outer edge of a star, like almost not even of Earth, you know, to just be something entirely different than everyone else. And to feel lonely there, you know, to be so unique and different, you know, that you're alone and you look up and you see twinkling stars, you know, on this planet that's founded in solitude and cloaked in solitude, you know, to feel that loneliness. And yet, to also acknowledge that you are a star child. And I love the idea of star child, you know, just something fantastic. Not to be ashamed or even saddened by your own uniqueness, although there appears to be some, like, acknowledgement of being lonely. It's not necessarily, like, a regret for being yourself. It's more of a wishing there were more like you. Is beautiful. you know, and then to explore the things that you admire about yourself. You know, the eyes of flames, you know, words that devour, a mind of penetrating light. You know, I stand taller than Olympus, straighter than a ray. Makes me think, you know, I'm proud. I'm proud of who I am. Like, I am so happy to be me. I was really entranced by those last two lines, three lines, really. You know, I was there. I created the flower, the offspring of the butterfly. You know, to be inspired by a butterfly to make a flower is a lovely concept, but also really interestingly backwards. And yet I love the creativity of the idea, you know, because, of course, flowers existed before butterflies. I mean, one, you know, an insect is much later down in the evolutionary chain than plants, but also, like, butterflies need flowers to live. So I found it very interesting, the idea of the butterfly inspiring the creation of a flower, which I think speaks a lot to, like, the uniqueness and difference of this person. At least that's how I took it. Maybe someone took it entirely differently. That's the direction my mind went. Saviana.
Well, in terms of the flower making the butterfly, the butterfly making the flower, butterflies are pollinators. So that it's potential that they are in that circle of life of helping new baby flowers come to life. They are nourished by the flowers, but the flowers are also multiplied because of them. So I think that could be like a metaphor for a larger purpose of like how we spread the life of also needing to get. I've lost it, but there's something about how it's all interwoven, where we need each other. Symbiotic, mm-hmm. I think is the word I was looking for. Symbiotic relationships of nature, and I like the way that this flows. New molten. I love that visual of the molten earth when right after the volcano erupts and there's like that new land that is forming, that island made out of fire. There's something so magical to me that lava can become land. The earth thundered, and there's this like crying for disaster, but in a way it seems like it may also be creation. So disaster and creation being mixed in together is fascinating to me. Where is it now? Eerie, mystic, hushed. I like those three words together. My fingers are fragments of gravity. I love that line. And I kiss the moss of antiquity. There's something really, truly beautiful about that, too. Wonderful phrasing.
Yeah, the phrasing in this is very well done. Beautiful images. I like a lot of the ones that you pointed out. Again, the fingers of gravity. There's so many good ones. Excellent comment. What have we got going on now?
Now I'm going to read one by Daniel DeShino, assuming my internet will cooperate. It's let me copy it. Is it going to let me paste it? It's a Schrodinger's cat situation. It's like, is the internet alive? Yes, it is. Okay. There we go. All right. Sunshine from Darkness on a Hamster Wheel Horizon by Daniel DeShino. I had someone come up to me once and quote something I said to them, and they told me how much of a difference it made in their life. I didn't remember saying it, and I barely remembered the person. That's certainly not a heroic story. But what is a hero? Besides my family, who were not only my inspiration but my reason, Neil Peart of the band Rush is probably my biggest influence. I not only play drums because of him, but discovered music. He is also why I write poetry and is a template to achieve based on his work ethic. There was a point I wanted to be him, or at least his life. Then his daughter died in a car accident, and his wife of cancer 9 months later. I did not want to be him anymore. And I'm sure he didn't either. But he inspired again with what is really important. After a long hiatus, his career went on. He then died in his 60s of brain cancer, I believe, stemming from depression and alcoholism from the original tragedy. Again, I did not want to be him, but he inspired me to take care of myself. Wherever This is Being Read, I originally wrote it for a poetry website, although I don't know that this is really a poem. Then again, I don't really consider myself a poet. I think it's a poem, but what do I know? But Neil stated, never let anyone tell you how to express yourself or what your art is, as it will cease to be true art or expression. So try to express pure and true. He continues to inspire, even in this writing. His bandmates recently wrote a song called Western Sunset as a tribute to him, inspired by one of the last times they were together on Neil's balcony, watching a western sunset, and all seemed at peace. I think I understand sunsets now. To this day, I can continue to see new people inspired by him, which is helping me to understand why sunsets always turn back into sunrises, and light always seems to follow darkness. Neil spent his life perfecting his craft, riding motor and pedal bikes hundreds of thousands of miles all over the world, and laughing with his friends and family. And although he has now ridden his bike far over the horizon, his light has not completely fallen, at least on me. He once said, inspiration is the spark that lights itself. And I say, he is a rock on which tinder I have struck. And the sunrise is only a sunset awakening, and the horizon just the inspiration to catch it, not an impossible task, just never ends. Like true inspiration. End poem. And I have to say that this works with both of our contests somehow.
It does.
It really does. Wow.
I was thinking that as you were reading it. I'm like, which contest? Wait a minute.
I was starting to wonder why I put it in the wrong section, because I'm like, this matches our contest so well.
But it still works with your contest too. I liked this. It felt very speak to the reader, like just almost like a conversation, and yet like a thought. It feels like one of those thoughts that you'd have like late at night, maybe after a cocktail or two, where you're just kind of really exploring your own understanding of things. You know, and this being like the way that you've, or the narrator here, has idolized Neil Peart, and the way that that idolization and the way that that looking up to someone has changed over the years, you know, with the tragic events in Neil's life, but also, you know, the different fears that it led him and took him, and how that didn't really destroy him as a person, you know, but was painful. And yet what that means to the narrator, you know, and how it's changed their worldview. The looking at the poem, the Western, I mean, the song, Western Sunset, you know, as kind of a memorial that a bandmate wrote for him about the times that they were together. I picture the narrator also watching a sunset, you know, as they're contemplating the different things that Neil Peart has meant to them in their life, and how you can have impact somebody with something you say or do that can be so minor that you don't even know it or recall it. You know, it's just like this poem starts off with the "someone came up to me once," and yet at the same time, to this narrator, Neil Peart once, you know, said a song lyric or did in a way that dramatically affected this person's life. And yet he would have no idea. He literally would have no clue who this person is, or that they had that profound of an effect on somebody. And I like that way that that ties in to this idea of the horizon, you know, and the way that it comes back today, and that we all kind of interact and affect each other in ways that you may not even know or can be completely unforeseen. Well, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was beautiful and well done. So I enjoyed it very much. Your thoughts, Tiziana?
I agree. I enjoyed it too. And I like that it, like you said, it opens up with, you know, someone who he had an influence on who he didn't even know that he would have an impact on. And then it's like how his hero, Neil, had an impact on him and wouldn't have been aware of it. And that I think that really is a statement that we all have impact on people's lives that we don't realize, even if we're not, you know, celebrities that have perhaps an impact on more people because their words get out there more. But that it, even the quotation air quotes, I should say, ordinary man such as Daniel had an impact on someone like this. And you know, he breaks the fourth wall in such like humble ways. Like, I don't know if this is a poem, and I don't really consider myself a poet. Don't consider yourself a poet, Daniel. Your poems are on our show every week, and they're always great. So you're a poet. I'm calling it. but I enjoy the conversational way that you do break the fourth wall in this poem. Is that even what that's called? I think it is. I think of it as like Deadpool when he talks to the screen. I'm pretty sure that's the fourth wall. I could be wrong.
Yeah. No, you're right.
All right. Daniel DeShino is the new Deadpool. the Deadpool of all poetry. For the record, I enjoy Deadpool. and this does not have the darkness that Deadpool usually does, but I really like how he shows that he had inspiration from the man, from his work, his music, and from how he dealt with things in his life. And even once you realize you don't want to be someone, you can still take inspiration from them. So I thought this was really like a self-reflective and thought-provoking kind of thing, where it makes you wonder, who are the people who influence you in these ways, and who do you want to leave this kind of inspiration to? And I was reading in the AN, he did write it for both of our contests. He changed his AN later, saying that he had thought that we were going to do our contest on the same night, so he thought he would make it work for both. But then we split it up, so yours was last week and mine was going to be this week. And he was like, oh, never mind. But the thing is, we ended up doing half of yours tonight, so it worked out.
Yep.
All right. That worked out for you, Daniel. You did end up working for both of our shows. I like it. Now let's see, who do we have next? All right, so that was all for that contest, but in my concern that that contest didn't have many entries, I made another one because that's what I do. and it was a quote from Omar Khayyam. I apologize if I said that wrong. It says, when you love even the flaws of your beloved. And when you do not love, even his merits are irritating. So our entry for that is by A. Shakanovsky. And Babbler, would you read that for us, please?
Absolutely. As soon as my mouth feels like really. Okay. This is a perfect partner. When filled with youthful aspiration, it seems to be a human trait to seek somewhere in God's creation the one who is our perfect mate. Someone handsome, kind, and sweet is what we like to fantasize to make our childhood dreams complete until such time we realize. In dreams alone you find perfection. Every person has their flaws. Dismiss that foolish misconception, and someone out there will be yours. End poem. I really enjoyed this brevity. You know, I've honestly tried to write a poem about a similar topic myself, and for me, it's always come out cheesy or haven't figured out how to tie up the end the way I want to. But I think this does it really beautifully. You know, looking for the perfect person, you know, and you have this list in your head of all the things that the perfect person is going to be, and they really are perfect. They're flawless and wonderful, and then as you get older, you realize this person doesn't exist. There is no such thing as the perfect person. And also, spoiler alert, you yourself are not a perfect person. But it's not about being perfect. It's learning to love and enjoy the other person's imperfections, you know, or decide which things are important to you and which things really aren't, you know. And that's kind of done via experience and realizing what things are really important to you as you grow and change. And I think this really explores that idea beautifully. You know, in dreams alone, you find perfection. So true. So I thought this was a wonderful write from A. Shakanovsky. Your thoughts, Casey, on it?
I think there's a lot of wisdom in this. It's so true that everyone is going to have those flaws. And I liked your spoiler alert of, what are you saying? I have flaws. I'm made entirely of flaws. But I think this is a really honest and realistic piece, but it has like this innocence to it at the same time, that, you know, it captures that kind of hopefulness. And even though it's telling you be realistic, it's not harsh about it. You know, it's not like everyone's gonna suck and deal with it. It's there's still that hope that like someone out there, there is someone out there for you. They're just not what you think they're gonna be. I really like that. One time I had this boyfriend who, I can't remember what I was saying. I was like, I was upset about like the way my swimsuit was fitting or something. And he was like, it's because you're real. And he was like, so like positive, like you just seen like the smile on his face. And I'm like, yeah, I'm real. And he was just like, no, but if it was like perfect, I wouldn't believe that you liked me. I don't know how to take that. But he was like, I actually, like, really like that you're not perfect. I'm like, okay. You're so real. I'm a little too real. But I like, this is a wonderful poem. So thank you, A. Shakanovsky. I also wrote to this prompt just a few minutes before the show, as I seem to have become a procrastinator. Loves Lenses versus Hates You by Aphasiana. In Loves Lenses, His faults are endearing. Clumsy can be cute. Insecure is humble. Controlling can seem attentive. In Hates You, charming comes off as insincere. Honesty strikes as blunt. Safety is boring. Adventure is reckless. Once they have your heart, they are nearly invincible. If they've earned your scorn, getting past it seems impossible. End poem.
I like this right, Faziana, because it can be so true. You know, it's not so much that love is blind as it is love is endlessly forgiving, or at least infatuation at the beginning. You know, I like the things that you point out too, like clumsy can be cute, but, you know, if they're constantly breaking everything you own, that's going to get really frustrating. Insecure is humble. Yeah, until you want them to have a spine and stand up for themselves, and you're sick of reassuring them of the same thing, like for the 5 millionth time, you know. Controlling can seem attentive. Yeah, until you're just sick of, like, you want to do something yourself and not be told what to do. It doesn't feel like attention. You know, and I enjoy that, you know, and then the opposite. Especially striking a chord with me is that honesty strikes as blunt. I can be very honest, and I know it comes across as blunt, but I never mean it to be harmful. You know, probably haven't seen much of that side of me in this format, but, you know, when people come to me for advice, and I seem to be the person that people like to come to for advice, it can be very abrupt feeling because I just kind of lay it all out because I just don't get the point of sidestepping things. And I know that that appears blunt to some people, and to other people it seems harsh. And you know, some people tell me I'm being mean, but I really don't mean it that way. I'm just trying to be as direct as possible because I feel like honesty requires that. And so I like that that line in particular because I feel like that really is very true. You know, and safety is boring. You know, there's balances in these things. I think it's kind of similar to what Doug's poem kind of in my context was doing, where you're balancing. You know, these are extremes, and the truth is really somewhere in the middle, you know. And then, of course, you know, once they have your heart, they're nearly invisible. They've earned your scorn, getting past it seems impossible. You know, if you love them, they're endearing, and if you hate them, they're intolerable. Turns to the other, like when you've been in a relationship for long and fallen out of love with somebody, and it feels like the blinders are off. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was well done, and I liked the qualities that you chose as well. Right. Anything you wanted to add?
No, I think that you summed it up well. I was disappointed that we only got a couple of entries in that contest because I stumbled across a bunch of quotes by Omar Khayyam, and I really liked them. And I'd never even heard of him, but he had so many wonderful quotes. I just, like, nobody wrote to it. So I don't know, but perhaps it's been a busy week for everyone. But I was just like, there was potential here, and it's not nobody wrote for it. We had, I think there were three entries, but only one of them sent me permission to use it. So I had to throw my own in there.
Yeah.
It happens sometimes, but it's okay because we had so many wonderful carryovers from your contest that it worked out nicely for our timing.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
It did, because we've reached the end of our show for this week. We'll, of course, be back again next week. And I have to judge some contests before I can make a new one. But keep an eye on All Poetry for Afasiana and Babbler, because we will have more contests for you very soon.
Yep, I actually have my next contest up.
Oh, tell us about it. Tell us about it.
It is called Wives Tales. is actually inspired by a conversation that Pam and I had during last week's show, where we got into this weird tangent about some different wives' tales that we've been told. And I just thought it'd be kind of fun to explore that because there's so many of them. You know, these are those little tidbits like don't swim after eating, or if you shave your hair off, it'll grow back faster, or if you pluck a gray, you'll get more. And some of them are based in truth, and some of them are just completely wrong. And yet, there's so many, and they also exist. So I thought it would be fun to write poems based on some wives' tales. I offered some up as inspiration if you want to go check out the contest. But also, you're free to write about any wives' tale that inspires you. Explore it. Have fun. So that is the contest for next week.
I like that. Challenge accepted. I'm going to try to find some more, too, just throw in some extra weird ones just because, you know, for fun.
There's so many.
There are. I like this. All right. Next week, we want to hear your inspired poems. Your poems inspired by wives' tales. It's getting late. My brain's not working anymore. Thank you so much to Doug for calling in, to Phil for giving us this time on Late Night Poets, and to everybody who wrote for our contests. We hope to hear from you again. And thank you, Pam Ray, for filling in for me last week. She's amazing and always jumps in to help. And Babbler, you're awesome, and I hope that you enjoy another week in your new house.
I will, and thanks to you as well, Faziana. A wonderful house. I'm feeling better.
I am feeling better, thank you. Good night, everyone.
Night.